It's syndicated radio talk show host, author, singer Al Cole welcome you to another edition of People of Distinction, the talk that gives an in-depth view of some of the most dynamic, intelligent, and successful people on the planet. I come from CBS Radio. My shows are nationally syndicated, and I've helped pave the way to treating women, guys too, with the dignity that they deserve with my new book, The Spirit of Romance. You got to love that, and I know that you do. Thank you, everybody, for all of the wonderful, wonderful comments on it. The orders to, and particularly the way that you've embraced the definition, as it were, of romance in my book as the loving relationship that we all enter into with life itself. Now, that's big-time territory there. You know, take a minute to reflect. Life, yeah, we're used to kind of life on the outside, relationships on the outside, husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, the mother, father, the sister, brother, the kids, and the best friend, too. Wonderful relationships. But you know what? The primary relationship is between you and you. You are the primary relationship of your life. And that infers consciousness, people. Let's get used to that word. We're talking about you, the arbiter of your consciousness. You were born that way. You know, you inherited that. That is something that can create love within you. You know, we're not talking about ego love here. We're talking about the kind of love that's garnered when you understand who you really are. You take that alone time, you understand who you really are, and you take the time to nurture some of your passions, the real things in life that make you happy, that draw love to your life, and that elevate you higher to that higher self-connection that you can have with every other human being on the planet through the energy that you generate in love. Love energy now. We're no longer talking about just the emotion of love, but now the inclusion of the energy in love. And that can actually connect you to that higher power that got you here in the first place. That's what we talk about on People of Distinction. No matter what the particular profession of my guest is, they will talk a little bit about how their professional life helps to elevate our human family. We love that. Give you a little bit more insight into People of Distinction. I'm blessed that it's aired through my People of Distinction radio network, which includes other great clients of mine. Actress Dee Wallace airs her show through my People of Distinction radio network. All the majors, you know, they have internet access these days. I'm included with the greatest, iTunes Radio Network and also the Live 365 Radio Network and its sister stations. So Dee Wallace, the actress who starred in E.T. the Extraterrestrial by Steven Spielberg, that classic. She played Drew Barrymore's mother in the film at the time. Well, Dee has her own exceptional talk show called Conscious Creation every Thursday on the Al Cole People of Distinction Radio Network. I'm also blessed to say that I'm published by the very prestigious book line, Chicken Soup for the Soul, distributed by Simon & Schuster, an affiliate of CBS, so we keep it all in the family. And I'm also the communications director for both the World Green Energy Symposium and also the Thought Leadership Conference in New York City and Washington, D.C. This brings a lot of high-level business leaders to People of Distinction, business leaders who speak proactively about the environment, about energy and new energy forms. We love that because we know sustainability has to be on the plate these days. We talk that way on People of Distinction. Also, diversity and inclusion issues with the Thought Leadership Conference. So we cover it all. And if you want to get in touch, hey, just email me at alcoleholic@gmail.com. You heard me right. That's alcoleholic@gmail.com, and I will return the email. Today, you got to strap down, people. You're going to love this lady. She has so much in common with the People of Distinction brand. Her name is Janet Langhart Cohen, an exceptional woman and truly a person of distinction. Janet is an award-winning journalist and social activist. She's been highly praised for her one-act play, Anne and Emmett. And we're going to be talking a lot about that, so I want you to stick around. Anne and Emmett offers an imaginary conversation between Anne Frank, the heroic and tragic victim of Nazi genocide, and Emmett Till, the black youth murdered in the 1950s in the segregated South. So you're going to love this conversation. Guess what? Janet was actually the first black woman in America to host a nationally syndicated show as well. Now, her show is called Good Morning, and we love that. She was number one, actually, in that category. She's interviewed some of the most influential newsmakers in the world, including, get this, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Margaret Thatcher, Rosa Parks, Ted Kennedy, Oprah Winfrey herself, Larry King himself, and Barbara Walters. I mean, get it. You know, this lady is exceptional. And, you know, what more can you say except Janet is also the wife of the former Defense Secretary, William Cohen, who served under President Bill Clinton. So she's been there. She's done that. And she's going to be talking it up on People of Distinction. And in 2007, she and her husband wrote Love in Black and White. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, too. We have to have race relations that are higher on the spiritual scale here, that we know that we are one, that we are brothers and sisters. And Janet's going to talk a little bit about that, too, in reference to her black and white relationship here. It's a memoir about race, religion, and romance, too, in America. So I love where it's coming from. And you're going to love this, too. I want you to run to this website, people, to find out more about Janet Langhart Cohen. And it's predictably www.janetlanghartcohen.com. Also, check out annandemmett.com. That's www.annandemmett.com. Welcome, Janet, to People of Distinction with Al Cole. Boy, it's really a pleasure to have you on board today. How are
well,
you?
Well, the pleasure is all mine, Al. Thank you very much for inviting me to have a conversation with you. I have to say, I'm fascinated by your book. Just listening to your intro, I feel elevated, uplifted, and you've just given me a task to nurture my passions.
Whoa.
And find the energy and just not the emotion in relationships and the meaning of love. That was wonderful. I have to get your book.
Oh, boy, you know, that is so appreciated, Janet. And, you know, love is the key. And sometimes, you know, when we talk about love, we'll, you know, kind of underscore it with a lot of, you know, the kind of nonsense, you know, a little bit about the fireplace and the, you know, the white wine that go down very, very easily. But, boy, when I talk about love, I'm talking about the kind of love that connects us to our human family, connects us to our source, that higher power. And we can do that. We can really create that through our romantic relationships on the outside, but particularly by the romantic relationship that we garner on the inside. We can become our own best lover.
Well, you know, it's so funny, too. I was brought up Christian. My family was a very religious Christian family, and we were taught always to project the love outside to others.
Yes.
And that is wonderful, but I had to mature and grow and realize that the first love has to be love of self, to have self-esteem, appreciation of who you are and the gift that you are to yourself and to the world. And it was so counterintuitive to start loving myself. And Whitney Houston had this wonderful song, The Greatest Love of All,
yeah,
is the love you have for yourself. And someone else, I can't remember who said it, said, it all begins with loving yourself. You can't love anyone else until you love yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn that because it was so different in the way that I was brought up and shaped and always living outside of my own heart rather than first discovering that my heart had value too and there were wonderful things that I could give from that.
Absolutely. And, you know, Janet, everybody on this planet who exists now, everybody who ever has existed, has loved and has been loved at least once in their life. And if we can take that to our insides, if we can say, all right, that guy out there, that woman out there, I've got some issues with them. Maybe I don't even like them too much. But in the privacy of our own thinking, when we're just relaxed, we can invite their consciousness into our consciousness, metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
It can even be through imagination. We can have a dialogue with them, and they can explain to us why they were loved at one point in their life and how they did love at one point in their life. And we're going to say, you know what, everything else that I thought about you, forget right now. It goes down the drain because you are lovable. You've proven to me that you're lovable and that you can love. And now I'm connecting to that love energy about you. If we could do that with every human being on the planet, and we can, not individually, but we can invite the human race into our consciousness and say, I love the fact that you were born at all, that I was born, that we're breathing air together, that we have these senses, these beautiful capacities to relate to each other as men and women, and mm-hmm. also as the wonderful, wonderful brothers and sisters that we really should be, we could have an extraordinary, beautiful world.
Well, you're absolutely right. One of my great mentors was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I knew him and traveled with him the last 2 years of his life across the country. And he would always say that we're nonviolent. We're not going to fight with words or weapons. We will face hate with love. Love will be our armor that will reduce the hate. And of course, he's right. We've come to great, great strengths and lengths because of that love that he had. And Elie Wiesel, we're going to talk about my play that has to do with Anne Frank, the young mm-hmm. Jewish girl who was murdered by the Nazis, and Emmett Till, who was murdered by hate in this country. But Elie Wiesel is a survivor of the Holocaust, and I had lunch with him one day, and I said, Professor Wiesel, do you think it's in the human DNA to hate? We have so much hate in the world. And he says, yes, Janet, it is, but it's also in our DNA to love.
Yeah.
And we must use our love to manage the hate, to get around it, to overcome it. And it was almost like Elie Wiesel and Martin King were saying the same things in different ways
yeah.
about love.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we're going to get into it here. Your play, we're coming to that. My listeners are on the edge of their seats, given who you are, the great things that you've done in your life. And starting out here with love, I want to follow up with Janet. Some of the things that have led you in the directions that of achievement that you've been into through love, some of your passions in life, the things maybe from an early age when you were just a little girl, and inspiring messages that came to you that you said, I love this, I love that, I want to do this, I want to really put my best foot forward to create something of myself in this world. How did you go about doing that?
Oh, what a profound question. It's hard to know why we do what we did when we began our lives, because mm-hmm. we're not all that conscious of, we're aware that we're in the world, but we're not really conscious of our powers or maybe our limitations or the barriers we're going to come to. I think if I can go back and take that rewind, I think it began with imagination. I always had an extraordinary imagination, a creative idea of how to make things better or how can I make my own life better. And then from the imagination came the drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, deprivation has enormous power over you. When you're deprived of something, they say necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
That when you need something, you create it. So
mm-hmm.
I think I began there, and then when I saw those powers come to life and work for me, and then I saw the people that I engaged along the way who all of them maybe not all of them helped me, but all of them taught me something.
Yeah.
And I learned from that, and I began to love the journey that I was on because it was so interesting. When you come from the deprivation that I came from, born in Indianapolis in the 1940s, during the days of apartheid America, and you're poor and you're living in the projects, you're coming from the bottom, the only way is up. So you have to have a tremendous amount of imagination, drive, good luck, people helping you, and love of life, love of your dream. I dreamt all the time of what I wanted to be. And the end result of that wasn't just self-satisfaction, but what can I do for others? My first dream was to be a teacher. I thought whatever I learned or acquire, I can give back to someone also coming along on their journey. So it was that love of humanity. Some people take their imagination and they want to live in solitude and write or paint. Doesn't mean they don't love, but I wanted to be a teaching missionary, and I wanted to go to Africa. I was influenced by Pearl Buck, who wrote The End of the Six Happiness. I think it was the movie that was named End of the Six Happiness, and it was The Good Earth that she wrote. And she was a missionary in China, and I wanted to go to Africa. And it was that love of people. And I never used the word love except when I say I love you to someone in my family or my husband or my puppy or my friends. But when I listen to you and you're asking me to examine that word love, it's love of life. In Hebrew, it's l'chaim. It's joie de vivre in French. It's love. It all begins there.
Yes.
And that is the beginning of creation, whether it's the development of yourself or an idea or helping another person or sharing a conversation like we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
It's love is a form of giving, and you know, the saying it's better to give than to receive truly is, because you feel so good because you know the first blessing came to you to give. And it's something like trying to pick up mercury. Have you ever tried to do that?
Yeah.
You can see the mercury and you can touch it, but you can't really grasp it.
That's right.
That's the difficulty I'm having with grasping exactly how it is I feel about that word, that universal word, love.
Yeah. Yeah, and yet we all know it when we feel it. We all know
when
we're experiencing it and when we're giving it, when somebody is beaming from ear to ear because we gave them some love. And that is the elevation of life, when we can really make somebody else's life. And you said it, you know, serving. That, at a young age, you found yourself by saying, you know, what can I do really to serve other people? And that is our mission as human beings, really to reach out that way. Janet Langhart Cohen, what an exceptional lady. She is our special guest here today on People of Distinction with Al Cole. I want you to visit her website, janetlanghartcohen.com. Also, visit this one, annandemmett.com. And we're going to be talking it up here right now about Ann and Emmett. This is a one-act play that is getting great reviews, highly praised, and I know why, because you have just put it together in such a wonderful way. Fill us in. What made you want to write about Ann and Emmett? Give us some of the details of your play here, Jen.
Well, it's curious in that Anne Frank and Emmett Till, I must again tell everyone, most people in the world know Anne Frank, the young Jewish girl who had the diary of Anne Frank. And she and her family, with another family or two, there were eight of them in the attic during the Nazi Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
They were in Amsterdam, and they fled from Germany, hoping to escape the Nazis. And then they had to further escape in this attic, which was called the Annex. And sadly, Anne Frank perished at Bergen-Belsen, one of the camps. And sadly, too, just 2 months after she perished, the Allies came to Europe and liberated Europe from the Nazis. And this is in 1945. Here in this country in 1955, a whole decade later, young Emmett Till, a young black boy, Christian black boy from Chicago, wanted to visit his family in the South, in Mississippi, Money, Mississippi, just as most of us African Americans, we come from the South, and in the summer of my generation, we would all go South and stay with our grandparents or aunts and uncles. Well, Emmett was also doing the same thing in 1955, in August of 1955, and he didn't honor the rules of apartheid America of the South, that young black boys were not to look on white women and certainly not to whistle at them. And Emmett showing up with his cousins, showing up saying, I don't have to act the way you do down here when I'm in Chicago, and I'm going to show off and be the way I am in Chicago. And he whistled at Carolyn Bryant. And her brother-in-law and husband came looking for him 2 days later at his Uncle Moses' home and took him from the home and beat him to death, shot him, took a cotton gin and tied around his neck and threw him in the Tallahatchie River. His mother, when the body was delivered to her in Chicago, the Mississippi State seal on his casket, on Emmett Till's casket, said, "Do not open." And she said, Miss Till said, "I'm having none of that."
Yeah.
And she had the casket open, and she wanted the world to see what had happened to her only child, what had happened to Emmett Till. And she said, "I want the world to see this and what they did to him. I want the world to see what they do to us, black people, with impunity." And Jet Magazine, black publisher, Johnson Publishing Magazine, owned by Mr. John H. Johnson, a weekly at that time, had a photographer there and took a picture of his corpse, his mutilated corpse. And that picture went around the world. And the irony is that in Germany, there was a headline in a German newspaper, of all places, that said, "In America, a Negro's life isn't worth a whistle." So I was, and going back to your original question on that, why this story, is because Anne Frank, her diary, was required reading in my all-black high school, and she was taught to me at 14 or 15, at a very impressionable age. I could identify with Anne Frank because we were the same age. I, too, kept a diary, and I think the reason I kept a diary is because she kept a diary. I purchased a diary right after that. And I could identify with her having a sister. I have a sister, and I felt my sister was the favorite, and she felt hers was. We also lived in a ghetto of a kind. We could leave our ghetto as African-Americans back in the 40s and 50s. Sadly, Anne could not leave her. She could not leave the Annex. But I identified with her, and her beautiful face and her dark eyes just haunted me, along with the story that she wrote about her life and being hemmed up. And even though I was reading the story and identifying, it was sad, too, because I knew how her story ended. In 1955, when Emmett was murdered, I, too, was 14. Emmett Till and I are the same age and of the same region, of the same ethnicity. And when Emmett was murdered, it was a year after Brown versus Board of Education, the Supreme Court decision that said black children could sit next to white children in classrooms, in essence. Oh. And I was all excited about going to school with white children because I'd always seen them on the other side of town, in the other side of the room or the store, and they were intriguing to me. I recognized our differences. I never knew why the twain should never meet. So here, after this decision, that summer, I was excited to go to school with white children, go to high school with white children. And then we got word with the Jet Magazine story that Emmett Till had been beaten to death because he whistled at a white woman. And all my hopes were dashed, and our community, the elders in our community, I saw the smiles go off their faces, their shoulders kind of shrug. My mother held on to my little brother a little closer, wouldn't let him out of her sight. It was a darkness, a cloud that went over our community. And so those two entities, Anne Frank, for her reasons, her sadness, her faith in believing in the goodness of people, and Emmett Till, his innocence, his just goofing off, got him killed, and the sadness of their parents who survived them. Anne Frank's father was the only one to survive. Anne perished, her sister Margot perished, as did her mother, but Otto Frank survived, and when he got home from the camp, he discovered his daughter's diary, and he had it published. And his doing that let the world know who Anne Frank was, because she wanted to be a writer. And the irony is the same with Emmett Till. His mother is the reason we know about Emmett Till, because there were thousands of us who were murdered and lynched, and no one ever knew their names. But because Mamie Till Mobley, Emmett's mother, insisted that the casket be open and allowed Jet Magazine to take that photograph, the world knows who he is. So in the play, I sort of look at the parallels, because you would never think there are commonalities between Anne Frank, a young Jewish girl in Germany, and Emmett Till, a young black boy, Christian black boy in America. You would never think anything there would be anything in common. They were both teenagers. She was 15 when she died. He was 14 when he was murdered. Their parents, as I said, kept their memory alive through the diary, through the casket being open and the photograph. And then we found out that their oppressors had commonalities. The Germans used the same tactics on the Jewish people that the southern white racists used on black people in those days. Jewish people had to get off the sidewalks when a German passed. We blacks would have to get off the sidewalks. The Jewish people could not look the Germans in the eye, the same for black people, and so on and so on. The Jewish people, when they could go out, they had to sit in the balcony of theaters and cinemas, the same for us. We couldn't be on the street after dark. The Jewish people couldn't be on after 8 o'clock on the streets. The same for black people. There were sundowner rules for us. There were certain areas of this country that we couldn't be in after sundown unless we had a passport or papers from the whites that we worked for. So I list all of those commonalities, and it's amazing how much two disparate young people who never met have in common. And when someone insulted my ethnicity from another ethnicity who said I shouldn't remember my past when I was writing my book, From Rage to Reason, My Life in Two Americas, this woman asked me, she said, Jenna, what is the rage? I said, growing up in apartheid America. She said, well, what two Americas are you talking about? And I said, growing up in segregated Jim Crow apartheid America and the America of promise now, where I can live anywhere I want, be anyone I want to be. I've lived in two worlds. My country and I have come of age together. And she said, oh, Janet, you're successful. Why would you want to go back to those days? Why would you want to bring up that past? And I thought, she said, why would you want to be a victim? And I never thought, despite having a history that has been victimized, that I was a victim. I just thought I was a survivor. And then I thought of Anne Frank, that she didn't survive. But of that era, there were survivors. And those survivors admonish us to remember, and they say never again. And the irony is that black people are told to forget, get over it, get over their history. So I thought of these two people at that moment because they had shaped me, each in a different way, Anne Frank in her way, Emmett Till in his way. And then I thought, what would they say to each other if they could meet? And I have them meeting in a place called memory, rather than heaven or an afterlife. I have them meet in memory because I remember them. And if we remember the atrocities that they had to endure, maybe we won't repeat them. Maybe we can do something about it. And my play is more than just a historical, taking creative liberties with two historic characters. It's really a play about calling to action for those of us who see history repeating itself over and over again in different forms, whether it's Bosnia, whether it's Rwanda, wherever it is, the genocide continues. And this is where we need love. And maybe if love doesn't come naturally in certain cultures for whatever reasons, maybe if we learn about the past, the things that we've done, the people who've endured them or didn't survive them, maybe we can do something, like Elie Wiesel said, manage the hate if we can't eradicate it. And while I was writing this, it was really out of frustration because I felt insulted that my history wasn't worthy of being remembered. I also thought, maybe if I write it in a way, because I wasn't a playwright before, I said, maybe if I write it in a way that people of Anne Frank and Emmett Till's age group, middle school group, could understand it. Maybe they would get it early enough, the essence of what happened to these two children. Because Anne and Emmett were two children who lived in societies that couldn't protect them. They were bullied, and the word bully is a big word now among children. They understand that word. Well, Hitler was a bully. The Nazis were a bully. The racist Klan Knight Riders of this country were bullies. So if they could get down to the essence of these two children and see what happened to them and that it's continuing to happen, maybe they can act. And I always ask after the the performances in when I'm in schools is to tell me, what did you make of this? Is there anything that you can identify? Do you see the commonalities? Do you see any replication of this now? And if you do, what can you do about it? And it's curious, often the word love comes up, Al.
So it's
a long way of telling the story.
Janet, that was stunning, stunning, absolutely. People, look, I want you to support what Janet is doing here. Ann and Emmett, you have to get on this website, support her, annandemmett.com. That's A-N-N-E and A-N-D, Emmett, E-M-M-E-T-T.com. Janet has said in such exemplary terms here that, you know, she's talking about a human being, Anne Frank, from a whole different area of life in Nazi Germany. The things that she underwent died, you know, just a little bit before the concentration camps might have been disbanded. Emmett Till, just an everyday human being here, happened to be black, happened maybe to say the wrong thing to a white woman, mutilated, not just murdered, mutilated, segregated South. What do they have in common? Well, you know, she ran it down. They have so much in common that way, and I've got to add to it. What they also have in common, people, is you. Now, I'm not going to say that they're human beings. Absolutely, they're human beings. And I'm pointing the finger at you right now. You are a human being. They live within you. They love within you. And see, the thing here is that it doesn't matter whether we're black or white, whether we're German or African-American. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Eastern, Middle Eastern culture. It doesn't matter if you're in South America, Central America, or any place on this planet, including the United States and Europe and everything else. You are first and foremost a human being. What that means is that every single human being can relate to at least two things. They can relate to love, and they can also relate to hate. And when human beings see both, and now we're talking about some hatefulness here, tears come to our eyes, people. We begin to emote. We begin to say, how could this happen? Why does it happen? Now, I want you, as my listening audience right now, to check out some of your insides. Now, it's not good enough to just see it on the outside and bemoan it on the outside or even embrace the love on the outside. You have to feel it on the inside. Emotional intelligence, now we're talking about. Spiritual intelligence. You have to feel maybe what Emmett felt, maybe what Anne Frank felt. And I'll tell you something, even if it's not to that extent, people, you have felt something like that in your life. You have been at the point of despair at certain points in your life. You've been at the point of elation at certain points in your life, and you know that elation is a lot better feeling than despair. You have a responsibility to you to make things better, make things right within your own consciousness, and then we can start to make things right on the outside, and there are maybe two ways we can do that. We've been through the civil rights movement. We know about people, you know, who shut down an entire bus system because they refused to sit in the back of the bus. They refused to man that bus and woman that bus anymore. And that bus company came to them and said, all right, we give in. Come on. You know, you can get to the bus. Now, we have to get into education here. If there were an education course, I'm talking about starting at day one, kindergarten, how can we best honor each other? Right from the get-go, we are instilling human beings, little human beings that we call children, with all of the positive directions here. We are honoring each other right from day one. And if we had every single year after that some sort of course in honoring each other as human beings, we would be a giant step into that direction of really honoring. Another thing we have to do is we have to look at the media. That's how we get our information, by and large. And we have to say, well, are we living in a negative or positive media? We're living in the times of a negative media, and everybody knows that. Turn it off, people. You know, and maybe I'm going a little bit far.
No, I agree with you.
Right. You have to have judge it by your conviction on the inside, your conscience, and make that media change to a not just a positive media for the sake of positivity. No. Expressing the real good that's going out there every single day, people are doing good in our world. and we have to express that. Am I on the right track here, Jen?
Oh, you're absolutely on the right track. And I, as a television person, I earned my living for 30 years in television, and I almost felt disloyal in turning off the TV because it was the same old negativity. And one of the stations, all of the stations, in fact, for the most part, if it bleeds, it leads, and if it's a bomb, if it's children being shot in school, if it's a woman murdering her boyfriend, it's on all the time, and then they have people with opinions coming on talking about it until the next catastrophe happens, and they're on that. They chew it like a dog on a bone. And I think, what about our children? What could we be using this medium for? Something more productive. Could we be showing the kids who won the spelling bee? Could we be giving them news they can use, information that will enhance them?
Yeah.
But it's all negative, and if it's not negative, then it's sexual, and if it's not sexual, it's violent. Even our entertainment, we're using the base sides of humanity for entertainment now, and we're just letting the good in us rot or not even grow at all. And it's so sad. The good thing about it is I've turned off TV and got into books. And a book you have to choose, pretty much. It's not like just the ease of turning a channel. You have to go and decide, okay, what genre do I want? What author do I want? What do I want to read? And go to the word. And it's so very sad. I wish things were different, but I think, you know, broadcasters and advertisers look at the numbers, and if the numbers are not there, then they change things. We can protest all we want. I don't know if being in the street, you know, protest days are relevant anymore because the technology has moved us all into the internet, to the web or whatever. But there's a way of just turning it off. If you don't use it, they will lose it. And maybe then they'll get it and give us something that we want.
Yeah, well said, perfectly said. Again, go to these websites. You got to check out the great work that Janet Langhart Cohen is doing. www.janetlanghartcohen.com and also annandemmett.com, her great new one-act play. And you're listening to People of Distinction with Al Cole. We've got a few minutes left in this great, great show here, Janet. We are loving it. And, you know, we're going to take it out with some possibility thinking into our future. And, you know, you wrote the one-act play on it, and you talked so wonderfully about how we can possibly come together here. And I would say absolutely, definitely, we will. And certain ways that we can maybe point to the future, things that we can do, things that are on your passion plate still, to get out there, to bring the human family together. And, you know, I want to use one of your books as maybe that springboard here. You and your husband, Love in Black and White. And it doesn't matter now the stature of the two people. What really matters is that the two people are of the highest stature because they are human beings. And one is black, one is white. And the race, religion, and romance aspect of it. I want you to inspire my audience right now with possibilities that you have learned in this lovely marriage, in this beautiful embracing of two people, you being one of them, your husband, William, being another, writing this book. How can we use that into bringing human beings together? Give us some of your reflections.
Well, Anne Frank, in her darkest hour, I think if you were to remember anything from her diary, this young girl's diary, it was that she believed in the goodness of people. Here she is in the darkest, horrible, most horrible time in human history, the extermination of 6 million souls, that she knew she was on the list. She was in hiding. But she wrote in her diary, I still believe in the goodness of people.
Yeah.
And I think that with my coming from apartheid America, having a cousin who was lynched, having being shaped by the murder of Emmett Till, traveling with Dr. King and seeing the things that he had to endure with racism and attractions even from other black people, I look for the good, and we must always dig like we're digging for gold, like if you've ever dug for potatoes. Potatoes don't grow on trees. We have to dig in the earth for it. The same thing for goodness, the same thing for love. We have to dig and work for it. And I did that. And coming out of the 60s, the Black Power era, I was surprised at the things that had happened to me that I could still love across the color line.
Yeah.
My humanity rose that I could still fall in love with someone white. And if I hadn't grown, I would have missed this extraordinary man that I'm in love with, that I married, if I had stayed in the darkness and the hate, in the resentment. And the same for Bill. Bill's mother is Irish. His father was Jewish. And in the Jewish tradition, you cannot be Jewish just by having one parent who is Jewish. It is your mother that has to be Jewish, unless she converts or when you go and a certain circumcision that you have to have. And, of course, his mother refused to convert. She was very happy being who she was. Mm-hmm. And his father said, well, if you can't be Jewish, then you can change your name. And Bill said, no, Cohen is my name. Cohen is who I am. I'm keeping my name, and I'm not allowing anybody else to define me. So I think it's digging and reaching for the love across the hate. I think it's knowing who you are. And we found each other. And another Supreme Court decision in 1967 called Loving versus Virginia, until that time, it was illegal in certain states, maybe 16 or 17 states in this country. In 1967, in your and my age of reason for the most part, this country had laws on the book that a Supreme Court decision had to change that blacks and whites could marry. If Bill and I decided to get married in 1967 or 66, we couldn't have gotten married in my home state of Indiana. We'd have to go over to Illinois. So those things have shaped us, and we were able to find each other. I think the success of our love is its work. It's communication. It's facing certain truths. It's acceptance. I remember when I was a kid, when we'd have interracial marriages in my family, all the people, mostly the whites, would say, oh, what will happen to the children if one is black and one is white? What will happen to the children of mixed marriages? Well, now we know what happens to the children.
Mm-hmm.
They grow up to become president, Barack Obama. So,
hey, absolutely.
So it's reaching higher than you can even dream sometimes or imagine or accept. I was so stunned when Barack Obama was elected, because I thought in my lifetime I will never see an African-American president of this country. Not that black people weren't ready. We've always been ready to be president, Secretary of State, talk show hosts like Oprah. We've always been ready to do that.
Right.
And people say to us, oh, black people have come a long way. And I say, no, white people, America has come a long way.
Uh-huh.
We've always been able to do that. And I think when we look and see the humanity in each other, see ourselves in each other, I think it becomes more possible in your view to love, to accept. But we must communicate, and we must face truths. When Bill and I did the Race and Reconciliation Conference, we had blacks and whites come to talk about the thing that we don't talk about across the color line. Whites talk about black people when they're all together, and black people, we sure enough talk about white people when we're together. But we never really tell a truth across the color line about how we feel. And I think we don't do that because one side is expecting to be blamed, and the other side is expecting to shame. And once we get beyond blame and shame, we can talk about it. And a lot of my black friends are surprised that Bill and I can talk openly about the Trayvon Martin case and how I feel about it, about the O.J. Simpson case, about about Lil Wayne, who insulted Emmett Till's image, about the LL Cool J Brad Paisley song. We can communicate and talk about it, and I think the reason we can do that, aside from the fact that I'd like to think we're evolved human beings, is that we love each other.
Yes.
and we love the truth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Whoa. You know, you sparked me, Janet, to just underscore something quickly here. Black and white, that springboard into something. You know, we're so used to even looking at our human body on the outside through the mirror and either admiring ourselves or putting ourselves down for whatever reason on the outside. And we're used to seeing the color of, you know, human being skin on the outside. Well, guess what, people? You know, you have an inside of your body, too. And it doesn't take a medical doctor to inform you about that. Don't wait until you get sick. You can inform yourself about that, too. Now, you know, all you have to do is maybe have the courage every once in a while to kiss your own hand. You know, you kiss your hand, you're honoring something about your body that is helping you. Well, guess what? You can even go inside even more than that. You can go to the inside of your body, and you can visualize what your inside of the body is like. And maybe there's a white blood corpuscle there that has saved your life last night, doing it thanklessly, and take a little gratitude. Whoa, thank you for keeping me alive. Bloodstream, mm-hmm. lungs, all of mm-hmm. this stuff. And guess what, people? There's no black and white on the inside. You know, every single human body ever existing on this planet has had pretty much the same inside.
When they broke the human genome, they cracked that, they discovered that despite the colors and the tribes and the cultures and heights and whatever we are in terms of our differences, that we're 99% the same.
Yeah.
And when you go to the hospital and you need blood, they don't ask you what color the person is. They ask you what blood type it is. So you're so right on when you go into the body. The body doesn't really discriminate based on color.
That's
it
right.
doesn't. And the intelligence of the heart that beats without us telling it to beat, our lungs breathe without us telling to do it, they have their own intelligence, and they do what they're supposed to do to keep us alive. And I'm getting from you, we should honor that.
Yes.
And find love in that, and humanity in that, and realizing that we all are so connected. We're so connected.
Boy, this has been just marvelous. What an experience here. And people, you know, again, one more time, I want you to run to her website. We're talking about Janet Langhart Cohen. Go to janetlanghartcohen.com. You are going to not just be impressed, you're going to be inspired by a lady who has lived her life according to the way that we're talking it up right now in People of Distinction. And also, please visit annandemmett.com. Support her in the great work that she's doing as a social activist, as a creative spirit with her one-act play, Anne and Emmett, Anne Frank and Emmett Till. Both tragic people in our history, but, you know, like all tragedies, we can overcome and we can
mm-hmm.
find that wonderful, wonderful silver lining, you know, within that dark cloud. We can find inspiration in their stories. And their stories are our stories if we dig deep enough. And we can find our pathway out to some of the stuff that is really digging a grave for us. We can live in light even with some of the tragedies that other people have persevered through. Anne Frank, Emmett Till persevered in the sense of leading us into the light through the inspiration of their courage. So we're talking that way here on People of Distinction. Thank you that is so much, Janet. This has been just my honor and pleasure to have you on People of Distinction today.
Al, it's been my pleasure. You have elevated my spirit and gotten me in touch with a greater depth of my own empathy and caring and identity with others. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, you inspired me with that opening. I was like, my mind was going a mile a minute. What you're talking about is so important. It is nourishment for the soul. There's so many people hurting and feeling left out and feeling down and can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And when you use the words you use and the way that you say them, it was so powerful.